K-Mud Podcast presents.
You've got K-Mud Community Radio's The Cannabis Show with your hosts, Steve Dodge and Sunshine Sarasota. Real pleased to have you guys out there listening to us. We're going to be talking with Sal from Casa Flor. And Sal and his partner, Lou, do extractions. And I thought it was time for us to talk about extractions.
Okay, cool. What company do they have?
They call themselves Casa Flor.
Casa Flor. Okay. Mm-hmm. And we're going to – what kind of extractions do they do?
We're going to find out.
Okay, great.
Yeah, I met him up at Humboldt Seed Company when I was up there buying my seeds from my farm. And I
– They don't just do extraction. They also have a farm.
Oh, yes, they do.
Like down Willits?
I think so. Casa Flor does?
I think so. Oh, exciting.
Okay, well, we're going to find out.
Let me look.
And we have Sal with us right now. Hi, Sal.
Hey, is this Steve?
This is Steve.
Hey, Steve. How you doing?
Doing really good. Great to have you on the show. Sitting next to me is Sunshine. She's my co-host.
Hi there.
Hi, Sunshine.
Yeah. So this is terrific. I understand that you went down south and got some awards for your pre-rolls. Is that what I heard?
Yes, that's correct. We went down. It was the Farmers Cup in San Diego in Vista, California. It was pretty cool. We took second place for R&D pre-rolls, and then we took, I think it was best appearance or best packaging or something like that. So we won two awards for the pre-rolls, so that was really cool. And another cool fact about it, fun fact, was it was the first licensed consumption and sales for San Diego County. So it was really cool.
Very cool. Okay. Well, hey, congrats, guy.
Thanks.
So please tell us a little something about yourselves.
Okay, well, my name is Sal. Me and my brother, we have Casa Flor. We're a family-owned business and brand here in California. We've been active since the Prop 215 days, and we have licensed cultivation in Mendocino County. We're currently based out of Willits, the Willits Valley there, and my family's from Sacramento for the most part, and my grandparents are both from Mexico, so... That's a little bit about me. And me and my brother do a lot of the strain development. My mom does our administrative side, and my sister does our metrics. So it's all in-house family biz.
Hey, that's great. You know, we here on the show, we love the family.
So you growing those big plants that Mendocino's known for?
Yeah, we grow some pretty good ones out there.
Pretty big. Nice.
Yeah, we have a... We have the natural sun grown that we do on our property, which is mostly for fresh frozen biomass. Mm-hmm. And then we also have the greenhouses, which we do for our flower. So that's what we do up there in Mendo. And we also have we had one of the last right to applies in Calaveras County.
Okay.
And so yeah, we're working on getting that active right now.
Nice. Okay,
yeah,
great.
That's pretty cool.
Wow.
Well, it sounds like you guys are a busy bunch.
You're growing.
Yeah. We're definitely expanding and we're growing. We're doing pretty good. We feel real thankful and blessed to be participating still here.
For sure. Yeah.
Okay, I met you up at Humboldt Seed Company. Is that where you, in fact, are getting your seeds?
So we do work with Nat on a lot of projects. You know, we've done some breedings together. We've also, you know, we've done like the pheno hunting at our place too. We've done some pheno hunting with him. We did the jelly donuts and a couple other ones. And so, but we also do our own stuff. We have a lot of our own, you know, seeds for BHO extraction, for solventless extraction. We have a little bit of natural sun grown for flower as well. Yeah. So we do work for Nat.
Oh, that's great.
Yeah. Oh, the last one my brother mentioned right now, the last one that we did with him was called the Perp. Yeah.
The Perp.
The Perps were now. Yeah, that was with Humboldt Seed Company.
And you...
The Perps number 50 we got to us. Yeah, it was a CF50, I think. Some of the guys out there, who was it? The Mendo Dope Boys had it. I don't know if there was a couple other people that grew it at their places. Ridgeline, I think maybe. Yeah, Jason. So that was pretty cool. Nice.
Okay. Okay. Yeah. So let me ask you, what extractions or kind of extractions do you focus on?
Okay. We do a little bit of both. You know, we started working with, you know, back in the day we worked with Moxie. I don't know if you guys remember them. They got bought out. And then we've done stuff with Bear Labs and Friendly Farms and Leaf and a couple other companies, Purist. But that's been the BHO side. You know, we started studying with the lab techs about different families of cannabis that transfer better for, you know, for BHO extraction. And then we, you know, so that's one part of it. And then the other part of the canopy that's for extraction is for the solventless side. And so, you know, for your hash and your rosins and stuff, we had a big focus on that for strain development last year. So that's, I think, probably the fastest part of the extraction, the concentrate side. That's the fastest growing part of the industry right now.
Extraction?
Hashes? For hash and rosins, like your solventless stuff.
Mm-hmm. Okay. So what do you think's driving that? I mean, a lot of people are like, how do I smoke my hash? Or, I mean, what do you think's kind of, driving that?
I'm not really sure. I think, for one, just people are just more aware of what they're putting in their bodies. Yeah. It's more clean, a little bit more healthy. It's just a different thing. And so I do feel like it's, you know, it's an old, like, hash is an old thing, right? But it's a new, like, now it's like the new. There's all these different techniques, and everybody has their own little style and, you know, what they do, and strain development as well. You know what I mean? So I think that's, you know, part of what it is, you know what I mean, right now? We're live right now, guys, right?
You're live.
Okay, right on. I'm sitting here with my brother. He's the other part of Casa Flor. Me and him work on all the projects together.
That's cool.
And, you know, we both, you know, work on the business together. My brother Luis.
Hey.
Hey, how's it going, guys?
Hey, thanks for joining us.
Glad to have you on the show, guy.
So what's your favorite hash strain that you're running right now?
I don't know. We have several. Like,
that's great.
We're cracking so many seeds and pheno hunting so many.
Fun.
Not really a favorite. There's a lot of favorites.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. We worked on some pretty cool stuff this year, I think. Nice. Our pink Tallyman has been really good to us over the years. Mm-hmm. And, you know, we worked on some cool projects this year. We worked with Johnny, you know, Johnny Caselli from Huckleberry. We did a breeding with him. That one specifically was like, we did a study with LeafWorks DNA and MyFlora DNA, they're searching for alleles. They're doing studies on alleles. Like, you know, you find certain alleles for specific outcomes. And, so we did some stuff with that, and then we bred some males that we had tested to his Whitethorn Rose.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And so that was really cool. I thought that was a really cool, you know, project. And Johnny's a really nice guy. Him and Rose, really nice people.
Yeah, fun.
Appreciate them. You know what I mean? So that was really nice to do that project with them. Then we're also doing something with Purple City Genetics, a similar thing where we did some work on some plants, some research on some specific genetics.
That's great.
And, yeah, we did a project with them as well. Who else did we work with them this year on stuff? Those were the two main ones, huh?
Yeah.
So we're gonna have a lot of pheno. Oh, and we did one with Nat too. With Nat from Humboldt Seeds. We bred some of the special genetics due to a papaya that he had, a donor papaya that was good for washing. Mm-hmm. And so we have those as well this year. So it should be really cool.
Hmm. Yeah.
So we did some work with Cosmic Forces Farm, Mario. He's a local.
Mario.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. You know Mario?
Yeah. He's a great farmer. He's got some good things going too.
Yeah, we did some strain, exchanging strains, and we did a reversal project with him on some stuff for washing. We made some crazy new crosses. Like, we're going to all be checking them together and pheno hunting and seeing which ones work for what extract.
Wow.
department, they get frozen for. But, yeah, we did some good crosses with him through the last few years. Some good work in general and good friend and neighbor farmer to have in the Willits Valley.
Yeah. He stays true to it for sure.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And, another thing on 420, there's an event kind of close to Mendo or Emerald Triangle. It's going to be down in Santa Rosa at Cake House Santa Rosa. So we'll be there. My cousin DJ Albert Moreno is going to be doing the DJ for the party. And it's supposed to be pretty big, pretty nice event. You know, we're doing that's for our branded side. So I thought I'd share that right now.
Where's it happening?
Santa Rosa, Cake House Dispensary.
Okay.
So shout out Cake House Santa Rosa.
Yeah.
Yeah. Sweet. A question for you now. Everyone is looking for a way to make a buck in this poor business of ours. And you've been concentrating on extraction. So you obviously think it's a viable option. Can you expand on why, how so, it's a viable option?
I think it's been good to us because just to be diversified, you know, not just depending on growing flower, you know, drying it and selling it off in bulk or wholesale. I think it really saved us when the prices of flower dipped, when it crashed. The fresh frozen biomass market was still doing pretty good. And so I think it's been helpful. Plus the new, you know, doing the strain development, you know, people are always looking for something new. So I think, like, as long as you can keep developing new things, you know, for extraction, new flavors and everything, I think that's just been very helpful. So,
I mean, yeah. But it's kind of like the music, right, where you don't want to end up with, like a one-hit wonder. I think it can take time for strains to actually gain traction. And it is important to, like, persevere for – it can take, like, 3 years, you know, even, like – and that's true with even hit songs. They can take a little while. So you might have something good and, like, don't just give it up and run to the next thing. You know what I mean? Like, give it time is kind of what
I – just add to it.
Yeah, for sure. You know?
Yeah.
And we're looking at a lot of things with the – like, on the extraction part, you know, like, you know, yields. You know, there's a lot of factors and variables that that go into it, you know, to make it, you know, make it more better. Like, if you have something that yields – you know, 5 or 6%, you know, versus a 2.5 or 3%, the same time and same money and same energy goes and you're getting 2 more pounds of oil, you know, and fabulous terps. I think, you know, there's just a lot more profit.
And, like, speaking of yield, is there one particular strain that you find you're like, okay, I'm going to, you know, that you use for, you know, maybe multiple times for crosses because it has such an exceptional yield?
We have a few, like, catalog strains that we do. Some of our BHO ones that we've worked with, like, for the last few years that people come, I think, to, you know, and they're kind of familiar with would be, like, the Goobers. You know, the last couple of years, the Orange Twist has been really good for us. These are around 5%. And the Goobers are a little bit lower. But I think those ones have been good and a little bit more popular.
Perp terps.
Oh, yeah, the perp terps. It's the NorCal perp spread to the blueberry muffin. And we took third place at the Secret Sauce Cup in diamonds with that one.
Oh, that's great.
So, yeah, that one's been pretty
good. We have several that we'll grow every year, and then we'll keep adding to them. Yeah. You know, like, we have, like, our good old faithfuls. Because we've been freezing weed since...
long time.
I think since 2018 we froze our first acre.
Yeah. Yeah.
Right.
And so we've been freezing weed for a lot of years and been using all the data from the extractors to help us with the breeding. So we're just not like saying, hey, this strain smells good and looks terrific. I'm going to cross it with this one that also looks good and smells terrific. We're using more science to do our breeding as well as our senses and, you know, smelling and looking. But yeah, we're using a lot of science to propel us forward with our breedings, and it helps tremendously.
Huh.
Sure. That's See, great. I'm going to jump in here and remind our listeners that they've got K-Mud Community Radio's The Cannabis Show with your hosts, Steve Dodge and Sunshine Sarah Seda. And we're real pleased to be talking with Sal and Louis from Casa Flor all about extracts. We're going to be opening up at the in about 5 minutes to callers. So if you've got a question, you want to make a comment, well, we're going to want to hear from you. Guys, with the freezing of the weed, a couple of questions for you. How big an operation do you need to be in order to effectively do that?
I think you can be on the smaller side for sure, you know.
Yeah.
I don't think you need to be, you know, unless you have a demand for it. We've been doing it for quite a few years, so, you know, kind of people kind of look for us now. You know what I mean? This last year we did one with Coal Fire, you know, which was really big. That one hit pretty good. You know what I mean? And so it just brings more recognition and, you know, just, you know, building the network, you know what I mean, as well. So, yeah, you know, I think you can have a smaller, if you're doing like a, you know, a 10,000 square foot, or if you're doing, you know, multiple acres, I think, you know, if you have the market for it and demand for it, I think, you know, go for it. And I think right now our canopy is pretty much like 40-50% BHO, and then about, you know, the same thing with the solventless side too. So we have of the natural sun grown anyway.
So, okay.
Yeah.
Okay. And you're finding that your target audience are folks who are engaged in extraction then.
For a big bulk of our frozen material, but for our dried flower out of our greenhouses, that's all going towards our brand. So we're in several stores throughout the state, and we're using our greenhouse flower. Majority of it's greenhouse flower. We have used a little bit from the outdoor if it comes out, you know, something crazy fire, but majority of it is coming from our greenhouses, and that's the flower we're using for our brand as well as for our pre-rolls or flower, you know, dry products like for our brand. The frozen, we're using some of it for our brand a little bit, but a lot of it goes towards collabs, like shout out Coal Fire, and like my brother said, shout out Friendly Farms, Fair Labs, Leaf Purist, shout out Leaf and Willits.
You know, blessed extracts.
Yeah, blessed extracts. Like anyone else, we forgot. You know, HHCO up in Nevada County. Even Rosin Tech.
Oh yeah, we did something last year with Rosin Tech too. They're pretty cool. Shout out to Paul. Yeah.
Okay, sweet. Cool. If you don't mind telling us, what kind of money can people expect from getting involved in Fresh Frozen?
Well, it's different. I think that the solventless, the hash and rosin stuff has been a little bit priced better, you know, and the BHO probably a little bit on the cheaper side. But I mean, I think it can be pretty good. And then if you have limited drying space as well, you know, I think it can be really helpful. I mean, instead of trying to dry everything and, you know, trim it, you know, especially with the price of flour being down, the trimming is, you know, I mean, that. Just that alone is a cost. But, yeah, I think that the fresh frozen, it can bring you a good chunk, you know, especially if, like I said, if you have the demand, if you have the network, partnerships already established or in the making, I think it can be very helpful. I think to do both, you know, I recommend people do both. Don't just depend on one thing. Diversify a little bit, you know, expand. That way it can help you survive. You know what I mean? If we survive, then we're here still. We have a voice, you know, we have a say. We can, you know, we can network and support each other. And so I think, you know, it's good to do both, do some concentrates and do some flower.
Sure. I think that's good advice. You think the same, don't you?
Yeah. Yeah. You want to diversify. I mean, me personally, I know I don't really like wash my resin in hydrocarbons, but like I'm just a small, you know, so I don't really have – I mean, there's some things. There's definitely some qualities to the BHO. And while we're on the subject, what are some of the qualities that you look for when you're, like, doing your science? Like, what are some better qualities that you look for in a BHO strain, say, versus like a hash strain? Is there a difference, or are they more or less the same?
Oh, no, they're completely different. Like, as most people would tell you, you know, sometimes you'll get a hash run that'll run good for BHO, but I think the other way around, you don't really see it as much. You know, not everything's good for hash and rosin, but I mean, I like a lot of the BHO stuff. You know, it can be different. I think there's certain terpenes that we kind of, you know, found that transfer better, so you get a better flavor,
right.
You know,
and
like a live resin or diamonds or whatever you're doing. So I think they can be very different. You know what I mean? I feel like the hash and rosins have been, you know, right now they're still in development, but I think that people are really starting to find them, you know, where it could be a lot more profitable.
Mm-hmm.
So, but they definitely two different things. Even the protocol for harvesting, you know,
when
you do BHO, we're vacuum sealing, you know, for the BHO, mm-hmm. Fresh frozen biomass, we vacuum seal those and put them in, you know, like tight packages. And then when we do our hash and rosin fresh frozen harvest, those are loosely packed, you know what I mean? So it's just a different, there's totally different ways of.
Right. That's interesting because when you're handling that fresh harvest, you just don't want to be bruising it, right? So like you do want to be handling it more delicately, because if it does get bruised, you're going to lose quite a bit of that terpene profile. You'll just lose some of those uplifted notes. Like, it'll just kind of get a little dull if it gets a little too beat up and smashed at harvest.
Yeah, say you will, we would lose yields too a little, but you can only be so, like, you know, it just depends how big your farm is too and how many people you have to help and, you know, the weather pattern, like, you know, it's going to break.
Always.
Be raining.
Everybody in Mendo and Humboldt knows about the weather and Trinity, right? Like,
oh yeah,
that can be it could be a challenge at times. I mean, well, you got to love it, but yeah, I think everybody.
Yeah, so if we see the weather coming, like, we're trying to mow it down, you know. But yeah, we're trying to do a good job.
Yeah, you got to keep, because that you have that flow with the fresh, right? Because you want it to be cold. Like, ideally, you'd be harvesting it from like 5 to 9, right? But from 5 in the evening till 9 in the morning, right? You'd be like all there all night long doing your harvest to keep it all cold. Because the colder it is when it comes, when you're bringing it out of the field, and it's not going to be wilting, and it's going to be a little tougher, and it can handle actually being more like, you know, if you're going to be a little rough in handling, it can take it a little bit better if it's already cold to begin with when you're working in the field.
Sure.
KMUD is a community radio station in the Redwood region of Northern California. Donate to support people-powered radio at kmud.org.
I'm going to jump in here and again remind our listeners they've got KMUD Community Radio's The Cannabis Show, and we're talking with Sal and Lou from Casa Flor. And if you'd like to ask a question or get involved in the conversation, we certainly want to hear from you. You can get us at 923-3911. Javi, our engineer, will get you in here. It's a 707-923-3911. And do we have a caller? We have a caller. Get him in.
All right.
Good afternoon. I'm calling relative to terpenes from sativa from the University of Arizona in Tempe as Dr. John Stryker's reader. And he has discovered a great connection between neuropathic pain and inflammation and the use to help resolve these chronic pathological pains, say with PTSD, as well as physical neuropathic pain, as in fibromyalgia. Now, Dr. John Stryker, incidentally, is in Tucson, Arizona, in the Department of Pharmacology. Now, my point is that there have been four terpenes, geranol, linalool, beta-carophyllene and alpha-humulene that have been tested by Dr. John Stryker. And my point is that I actually like a different terpene than that. I prefer limonene.
Okay.
Limonene, it's a terpene.
Gotcha.
L-I-M-O-N-E-N-E, and it's sort of a lemony flavor, like the sound of the word. But each person, possibly depending upon their state of health and their, you know, inclination, might do better with certain terpenes. And Dr. Stryker has found that Geranol has proven to be the most effective for musculocellular conditions, which 5% of the world suffer from, and that would include 4 million people, can be helped by terpenes for their chronic conditions with Geranol.
Okay.
How do you like that?
That's cool.
That is cool.
And my daughter, Pomona Lisa, told me it was on the internet today.
Oh.
Oh, nice.
Sweet. I didn't read that, but Poe told me.
Okay.
Right. So I thought I'd tell you guys.
Thanks for your call.
Thank you. Thank you.
Yeah,
thank you.
I mean, come on, Dr. John Stryker. I think it's Stryker in Tucson, Arizona.
Okay. Well, thanks.
He's doing this kind of research, I guess.
Yeah. Well, thanks for the heads up. I want to find out.
Who knows to him, really?
Yeah, I want to find out about him, too.
Because he might be able to help with Hashimoto's and other neuromuscular, as well as care for post-neuropathic pain from surgeries.
Okay.
Okay.
And, I mean, I'm not a doctor. I'm a music teacher. But
okay.
I've had lots of pain in my life.
Yeah. Aren't
I'm 71,
all.
You know.
Haven't we all?
So, you know, just saying. All right, I love you guys. Bye.
Okay, thank you. Thank you for your call.
Bye.
Thank you for calling.
So guys, can you talk a little bit about terpenes with us? Not everybody knows what they are, and not everyone knows how we can use them.
Yeah. You know, just real quick to touch on what the woman who called in right now mentioned about the different. It's kind of like, you know, figuring out how to apply the different compounds and everything in cannabis to certain diseases or, you know, stuff like that. I know that there's a few companies, and I've talked to a few that are working on, you know, like even not just in one strain in particular, but blends of different strains together and how that affects the body and how it makes people feel and their whole experience, you know, and so there is a lot to be said about that, you know, and I think very interesting, and, you know, there's still a lot more to learn about all that stuff. So really cool things. And on terpenes, I mean, you know, those are, and the flavonoids, like, that's all your smells and flavors, right? So I think that you know, right now there's a little bit more emphasis, I think, on the terpenes than there used to be. There still is. Everybody wants a high testing, which we know it doesn't make it better, but, you know, most people look for high THC content in most of the strains. So, but yeah, the terpenes, I think that, you know, I think that's a good thing. I think lately readings and strain development that we've been working on have been for phenos that have a little bit better flavor. I think especially for like specific for the pre-rolls, you know what I mean? It just makes a better product. I think a better experience, you know, for people. So, I like the terpenes. Yeah, I mean, I'm big on them. And right now, and doing extraction, I think for, you know, even besides yields, like you want it to have a good smell, a good taste, you know. And so I think that's a big thing.
Yeah, for sure.
So something we've talked about on the show before is terpenes versus THC. You know, it seems like a lot of dispensaries are more interested in getting high than they are in the fine art of terpenes.
Wait, we should be a little bit more descriptive in that. Like, THC by itself is one thing. But honestly, I mean, I'm a flavor person, right? I make my crosses. I'm all about flavor. But, like, the truth is that the type of high, the weight, the overall high, how you feel is probably even more important than the flavor. So it's not really so much about THC as it is just the overall effect.
Okay.
But I do happen to like flavors.
Well, I think I think you're right. And so we actually have two callers lined up. Let's get the first one in.
Awesome.
Hi, you're in the studio.
Hi, this is Shane.
Hey, Shane.
From Virginia, hi. Cal Poly Humboldt alumni here. I love the conversation. I have a couple, two questions. I was up in Massachusetts and with my mom and a friend of mine. And when she was at Woodstock back in the 60s, they smoked hash. And that's what was at Woodstock. I don't know if you guys know that. Mm-hmm. But the best hash seemed to be from the best flower back then. Are you emulating a lot of the hash that was made at Woodstock? That kind of, we're going to search out for the best flower, best processes, that kind of thing. Is there some of that old school stuff still going on today? And the other question I have is, what strains do you find are the best for making hash right now? Because what I hear over here on the East Coast is those really strong indicas people seem to really like. So those are my questions, and thank you.
Okay, thanks for your call, guy.
Thanks.
So, guys, what do you think?
You know, on the old school hash strain and the best flower, I think they could be two different things. I think, you know, I used to wash stuff back in the day, and you know, whatever we got is whatever we got. And some of it was really good, and some of it wasn't as good. But I think these days there are specific strains that people are working, you know, for like a higher yield. Because, I mean, you can wash stuff, but if it, you know, at the end of the day, we also have business to run. You know, we have bills to pay, family to take care of. And so I feel like it has to be, you know, it has to be within those margins, right? So I feel like we are seeking out, you know, like newer stuff. And there are some, I think, that's established that people know, like, you know, like if you look at some of the popular hash strains right now, like for instance, Johnny's White Thorn Rose, you know, you look at those, you got good yields, you got, you know, great flavor and stuff. And that is an older one. He could probably tell you better about that. But I mean, there are some, but I think it's right now with the thin margins, you know, you know, we really are trying to grow like the best of the best that we know there's a good possibility, you know, of having something that's going to be outstanding or exceptional, you know, for the hash yields or rosin yields and stuff like that. So
sure.
That's what we're doing. There is a combining of old with the new, but I do feel like nowadays there's a lot of stuff that's been bred, you know, for specific reasons, and they already have them. You know, there's a lot of stuff out there that are doing really well for that. So I don't know if that answered the first part, the first question that he had. I think he was mentioning the question was, are the old strains, you know, people, what we're looking for? Are we still using those? And so we are not. We're not using too much. We are using some, but not as much. I know there's a couple other people. I know there's like, I think Kevin Jodry and them, they're working some other stuff. My buddy Bob Hempfield, he's working on some stuff. So there is stuff out there. It's just we don't have it right now in our camp, you know. But I'm sure there's stuff out there. That's really good.
I think the other part of his question might have been, are you making kind of like the traditional pressed hash, like the temple balls?
Oh, okay. So we do both. We have what we're doing is we have our fresh frozen. That's going to be the live hash and rosin. And then we also have like cured trim. And that's usually what that's going to be for is we'll wash it and then we'll seek out the one that has the best terps and then we'll put that into our pre-rolls.
Okay.
So they'll be, yeah, it'll be, you know, hash infused or hash pre-rolls with hash. Yeah.
Okay. Nice.
Okay.
Yeah. Yeah.
Okay. Javi, do we still have a caller waiting?
You hear me?
Hey, yeah, we can hear you. Hello.
Okay, cool. I was just thinking, you know, Sunshine, you were talking about the that you're not only after the taste, but after the type of high. And I remember somebody you had on another show quite a while ago was like a terp guy, a terpene guy, and he, you know, did extracts of the terpenes themselves and would like sample them individually and talked, I think, a little bit about kind of getting a different sort of highs from different terps. So I wonder if anyone tried to chase down, you know, like, oh, what terps are in this weed that I like to smoke, or it gives me this kind of a high.
Yeah, I mean,
Or if that's just a combination of some of the other cannabinoids.
Yeah.
I wanted to hear. Oh, okay, go. I'm sorry.
Oh no, no, continue.
Okay, my other question. Well, you guys have mentioned, or Sunshine, I think you've mentioned, you know, dry versus wet trichomes or crystals or whatever, and one being better for hash than the other. And that's always confused me. Like, I don't know what I'm looking at. I just look at a plant and go, this one's really frosty. But obviously, your two guests, you guys are saying, no, there's specific ones that are good for this.
Oh, you're talking about the texture of the resin on your fingers off of a fresh plant?
Well, if that tells you kind of anything about the actual character of the trichomes themselves and their suitability for one extract versus another, or one product versus another. And my last question, I'm sorry to bombard you. I just really got excited about hearing about you guys, like, doing some of your breeding, looking at specific alleles, using science to help guide you and help focus your breeding efforts, and wondered, are there specific alleles that you have found or are looking at to that are, you know, good for, yeah, maybe some of these hash producing characteristics? So just touch on anything you want to. I'm really enjoying listening to you guys. Thanks for being on the show, you guys.
Awesome. All right.
Thanks. Thanks for your call, Guy. Thanks.
Thanks.
Okay.
Yeah. What do you think about that last caller? Do you have any comments?
Yeah, I think that's really cool. And yeah, I think right now, you know, we're it's still in the early stages, but like I said, we did some of the studies with, hey, shout out to Ryan and I think Dr. Eleanor there. We did find some phenos that were like homozygous for solventless production, from what they have already learned. And I do feel like it's still early and we're still learning more as we go, you know, as all this plays out, as time goes on. But, I do feel like it's good to breed the best to the best, still do those, tactics, but also being able to use science to reaffirm those things, you know. Mm-hmm. And I think over time, they'll already know, you know, they'll have, you know, say this times this will equal, you know what I mean? They'll have, and it won't be everyone. I think more of it is just based on percentages, you know. If you're going to grow, you know, say 100 plants of this, you might have a higher ratio of winners, you know, versus if you're just, you know, putting two and two together, you might have a few, you know, something like that. So I do feel like the breeding part is all, you know, you just have to put the work in. You know, you got to make the breedings. You've got to pheno hunt them, you know, and stuff like that. I feel like there's people that make seeds, and then there's people that do breedings that, like, have a goal and an agenda, you know.
Yeah.
And so there's just those two different things right there. So that's mm-hmm. one part of it. And then while it's still fresh in my mind, like on the hash and rosin on the solventless side, you know, we're looking at, like, different, like, you know, not just the frostiness, but there's, you know, sometimes people say you grab your fingertips and you put them together and you feel a little sandy, you know, and versus greasy. And this is specifically for hash is what I'm talking about. But then what we also do in the field is we're doing, like, the just the mason jar testing. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, it's basically putting some fresh flour into a mason jar with ice, and you shake it up a little bit and let it sit. And then you, on the bottom, you'll see that, you know, what's collecting. Some will have more than others, you know what I mean? And it doesn't really tell you anything but potential. I feel like those are just, small things that you can use in the field to, you know, find the ones. And then after you find them, you know, then you can have them ran and get your yields
exactly.
and all that. I do feel like it's important to keep records, you know, hash, and then if you're going to do a rosin press, like, what, you know, what are you getting out with all that, you know? And so, you know, there's a lot that goes into this, and I do feel like it's pretty exciting, you know, as we're learning, everybody's working together. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
I think,
how have your harvest times been changing or been influenced over the years, like in terms of like for hash and maybe also for the live for the fresh frozen?
Yeah, like just overall time or each one?
Like what are you learning about your harvest times and for when you decide to cut?
Oh, I think for the hash, I think for most of them, you're looking for like a cloudy trichome versus like an all the way dark one. But that it's tricky because, right, say the harvest takes 3 weeks, right? So you start, even if you start a little early, by the time you're at the last plants and it's over, you know, you're well into it. But I mean, you know, it's timing and just looking at it and making it, you know, good judgment.
Yeah, but also, you know, it's kind of cool because then you're blending like an earlier cut with a later cut. You know what I'm saying? And then you're going to end up with like a little bit of both of those qualities.
Yeah.
Some of my buddies that do the hash washing, like really into it, they usually try to say 20%, 15 to 20% amber. I think a lot of it with outdoor farming too has to do with the weather,
you know, because
like in Willits, like we freeze, you know, so you got to pay attention to when the freezes are coming.
Yeah.
I mean, let alone the rain, you know, and like sometimes it could be a day of rain, or sometimes it could be, you know, 5 to 7 days of rain. So you got to kind of like pay attention to that. But we're really efficient, and we've learned. I mean, we're still constantly learning, but I think we're pretty advanced at our harvest,
yeah,
you know, and
sure.
Even our storage of the fresh frozen, like how to utilize the space, because like it takes up a lot of space. So we've learned through the years of how to be more efficient and really how to take down like an acre of weed with not that many people anymore and still do a really good job compared to.
Yeah.
When we first started. You know,
yeah.
So.
And working with the same people, too. They're trained now. You know, we've been working with some of the same folks, you know, and families that, since the beginning. So everybody has an idea what's going on, you know what I mean, and already familiar with the process.
That helps. We've got another caller here at the top of the hour.
Let's take our last caller.
So you're on the air, but we're running out of time. What's your question or comment?
Joe from Vacaville, and other gentleman that was correct about, you know, back east in the 60s, the different kinds of hash we had was just incredible because the weed sucked. And just another comment. I don't know if you gentlemen have seen any of the videos about these people in Morocco making hash. It's fantastic. I know I saw it a few years ago. My son turned me on to it, and you guys should check it out. And you know, I sure miss that flavor and the old school hash. You know, I mean, from Nepal, and yeah, I don't know if you can create that. Well, thank you so much. Great show. Stay well, be safe, and have a great day.
Hey, thanks for your call.
Thank you.
So have you guys reached out to any of that old school stuff?
Not really like looking for it, but talking with people that work over there or that have been over there and maybe people that are supplying seeds to Morocco. But we haven't dove into it yet, but just different opportunities have arisen. But we didn't, you know, just mostly just talking about it with the people, but not really actually making any moves out there yet.
Yeah, I got it. We really are coming up on the top of the hour, but I had two questions that I'd least like you to comment on quickly. Do you find people with medical needs reaching out to your product?
Yeah, I think there have been quite a few over the years. And I think it's good to have keep an eye on the medical perspective. The recreational is one thing, but I do feel like you know, it's been you know, like something that's been healing for people. I don't know if, you know, if there's any Mexicans listening, but in the Mexican community, cannabis has been around for 1,000 years. I don't know how long really, but I mean, my grandparents and them used to make like an alcohol rub for arthritis.
Yeah.
and they would put cannabis and other herbs and stuff like that. So, you
pomadas,
know, yeah, pomadas and stuff, rubs. And
yeah.
So I do feel like there's a lot of value in that, you know, and they're still doing studies on it. I think when they I don't know if it's going to be the rescheduling process or a different way that they'll be able to do more research on it that won't be conflicting with federal, you know, grants and stuff like that. Or, you know, we were doing something with UC Davis, and at the same thing that they had, that was a problem there too, is they, you know, there's a conflict between the federal, you know, grants that they get, so they can't use a lot of the stuff, a lot of the money for those, that type of research. But
I've heard that.
I do think medical, you know, there's a big part of that, and I think it helps people every day. You know, there's lots mm-hmm. of people out there that, you know, that it makes them feel better, whether it's you know, they're sick, or maybe it just made them have a better day, or maybe, you know, they gave them a smile or something they could appreciate, you know what I mean? I do feel like that's a good thing, you know, a really good experience.
Well, you know,
I want to add to that, like, even myself, like, I don't smoke, like, every day. And this is Luis. I don't smoke. Like, sometimes, like, I didn't smoke for 7 years. And then when I started, I can't handle it. Like, I'll get too high. I won't be able to communicate. Definitely can't smoke at an event and then run around and talk business. I just...
Isn't it funny, huh?
Too high.
Yeah.
But it helps me, like, if I had a long day and I'm stressed out, or my, you know, physical labor, maybe take one hit and then get a good night's sleep, or take a little piece of edible or something. And that's how I use it, more like medicine for myself. And
beautiful.
And so, I don't really use it like I used to. You know, I used to smoke, like, recreational, I guess. But, yeah, I haven't done that now for 8 years. I've just, if I do, I use it more for medical use.
Okay.
Yeah, for sure.
We really are at the top of the hour. Do you gentlemen have any closing remarks you'd like to make?
We just want to say, I want to say, this is Sal. Just really thank you for having us on here. We appreciate you. It was really nice to meet you. And everybody who's listening out there, you know that, you know, we say hello, and we want to say thank you for a lot of the love and support. You know, we're a family-owned business, and, you know, we don't have any investors or backers. It's just us saving all our pennies to make it. You know what I mean? So we appreciate all the love and support from people.
Guys.
And anybody out there who wants to do something, who's in the industry, who's working, you know, if they like to reach out and talk to us about, you know, figuring out a way we can work together, we're always open to networking with good people.
Beautiful.
And they could find us on Instagram at Casa Flor Family. Yeah, all one word, Casa Flor Family.
Terrific.
I want to give a shout out to our neighbor Jesse Stickyfields, Nat over at Madrone, Treehouse Farm over in Potter Valley, and all the other farmers working hard out there.
Mendo Mikey Lyon, what's up, Mendo Mikey?
Yeah.
Right on, guys. Yeah.
Hey, guys, thank you so much.
Have a great season.
You've been terrific on the show. I'm so glad you could be with us. So, you out there, you've been listening to KMUD Community Radio's The Cannabis Show with your host Steve Dodge and Sunshine Sarah Seda. We've been very pleased to be speaking with Sal and Lou from Casa Flor. Next week, we actually are going to be interviewing Nat from Humboldt Seed Company, and he's going to talk about this year's seeds. Also, he took a recent trip to Spain. Spanibus.
That'll be fun.
And
we're
also going to explore his genetic efforts. So tune in, listen in, call in. Thanks again, guys.
Yeah, thank you.
Thanks, guys. Thank you, man.
Bye.
Bye.
Bye-bye.
This has been a KMUD podcast. To listen to other shows and more episodes of this show, find us on all the platforms where you get your podcast, and also on our website, kmud.org.